Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Admiralty when we come back. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the world's most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against their liberties, privacy, and private property by these powerful government agencies like the multinational corporations, the lobbies and lobbyists, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution which was designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. These courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property. It's not the Congress or the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not the one who is indifferent thereto? That's because it's a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat, and it cannot be claimed by an attorney or a solicitor. It is valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. Now, that comes from a case called U.S. versus Johnson. And that's why I contend that we should listen more to the judges and listen a lot less to the politicians and lawyers. Now, listen to what that judge said in that statement. He said, "Your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person." Now, if you'd like more information about rights and courtroom strategy and procedure, then why don't you call the law school at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, educational, informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Admiralty. Where does it come from? What does it look like? And I told you, if it's got a black body and a white stripe and smells real bad, we call it a skunk. Now, most people recognize a skunk, but there's some that call them civet cats. They just have to be different. Now, when we're talking about law, there's three distinct branches of law: equity, admiralty, and the common law. Three distinct branches. Federal district court judges wear all three hats at the same time. Now, not all judges do that. You see, in the state courts, we have Judge Judy. Now, that's the equitable court. And then we may have a maritime court in your state. Or you'll have a district court, which handles your admiralty-type cases. Admiralty, remember, comes under contract. If there's a contract involved, there's an admiralty. And it doesn't have to be a contract that you know anything about, because we have things called adhesion contracts. And a driver's license, marriage license, business license, social security. These are the types of endeavors that we get involved in that are called adhesion contracts. Now, I know most of you call these licenses, and then some smart lawyer over here is going to say, "Well, you know, I looked it up in the dictionary, and a license isn't a contract. The dictionary says so." Well, like I said last time, if it's got a black body and a white stripe and smells bad out here in the countryside, we call it a skunk. Now, a contract has four elements. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. Four elements to a contract. And all of these licenses have those four elements. Now, call it a civet cat if you want to. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success, but from my point of view, those are contracts, and those contracts have consequences. Consequences. And when you sign up for the driver's license, you know, then you've invited the highway patrolman to butt into your life. When you sign up for that business license and you're acting in trade, commerce, business, and industry out on Main Street, then you're asking the state to butt into your life. When you join the Army, you're asking somebody to butt into your life. They're going to tell you when to get up in the morning, when to go to bed at night, and what to do in between. There's little or no freedom involved with these admiralty contracts. People complain bitterly. They'll call the law school and say, I'm from the People's Republic of Michigan. I mean, just had it right up to their eyeballs with government regulation. But boys and girls, you invited the government regulation. You wanted it. You couldn't get it any other way. You've got to go sign up for it, for crying out loud. Social aid isn't out knocking on your door unless you signed a contract. You got to have a marriage license, a birth certificate, and citizenship to get social aid to even come out and knock on your door. Now, let's think about that one for a minute. Let's suppose that the French ambassador to the United Nations, living in New York City, he's got a 12-year-old kid. And this 12-year-old kid, he's out dinking around at 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock or 11 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And social lady, the truant officer, sees him out marauding around on the streets during school hours, comes up to this kid and says, hey, you, how come you're not in school? And this little scamp says, kiss off, social lady, I ain't answering your questions. So she nabs this little critter, hauls him in, and holds him in juvenile hall. And then they call his dad in. His dad, now remember, is the ambassador from the country of France. He's stationed here in the United States. Maybe he's been here for 5 years. Maybe he has an apartment in Lower Manhattan. Maybe the guy drives an automobile and he's lived here for 5 years or so. I mean, he speaks English. He looks like an American. He acts like an American. He eats like an American. He speaks like an American, but he's not. He's a Frenchman, and his kid is French. Now, he doesn't have his kid enrolled in PS 235. And social lady is just real upset about that. She sees this little scamp running around on the streets, and he's worth 58 bucks a day in school. Out on the street, ain't worth nothing. Now, how do you think that case is going to come out? Do you think that this French ambassador is going to walk in there, plead not guilty, and just kind of cry a lot in front of Judge Judy? Or do you think he's going to say, now listen, lady, you need to butt out. Butt out. So, when this guy walks in, instead of pleading not guilty, I think he's going to raise a jurisdictional challenge based upon citizenship. I think he's going to walk in and say, well, I've got diplomatic immunity. I might look like I'm a seaman. I might smell like a seaman, and I might act like a seaman, but I'm really not a seaman. See, I'm not a citizen. We see this in tax cases quite often. You know, people will call the law school and they complain bitterly about the IRS, and they complain about government officials butting into their lives and so on. But upon examination, we find out invariably these people have social security numbers, which is a taxpayer identification number. They're citizens of the United States. And they're working in some kind of trade, commerce, business, and industry accepting commercial paper. So they come under the Commerce Clause at Article 1, Section 8. They come under admiralty because it's the broad jurisdiction of the courts. They're not paying their taxes, and they don't think that they need to for various reasons. They're citizens of the United States with a social contract. And yet they're arguing that, hey, I'm not a taxpayer, or I'm not a person required, or I've got rights, and you need to take me into a common law court. Boys and girls, taxation has nothing to do with the common law. The common law is the law that comes from God. Remember, the law of God, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery and pay your tithes. God never levied an income tax upon you people. He levied a tithe on you. Tithe, not tax. I know they both start with a T, but they're opposite poles from one another. You know, God never instructed you concerning Social Security. That was an idea that you came up with. That's your plan. That's your idea. God told you to pay a 10% tithe. He didn't tell you to pay 17 to 42% income tax. God told you, you shall live by the sweat on your face. You're the one that came up with the idea that, hell no, I won't go. I'm going to work here at the defense industry and stand at the water cooler in air-conditioned comfort, pinching the girls on the butt. I'm not going to work by the sweat on my face. That was your idea. And, of course, each and every one of these ideas, these legal concepts that we develop, have consequences. When you don't pay your taxes, then tax man gets after you. You don't send your kid to school, social lady gets after you. And you're speeding down the highway, then highway patrolman, he gets after you. And the solution to all of this is to get the hell out of Dodge. Seems like to me that if you didn't want to pay the income tax, you ought to stop having income. God never instructed you people to have income. Never. He told you to deal in property and increase. You know, this profit and income is your idea. That was something you developed that. You didn't get that from Moses. You didn't get that from Isaiah or Jeremiah or Ezekiel. So when you've got a tax problem over here caused by your Social Security account because you're a seaman on the ship and you're dealing in Social Security, you're dealing in commercial paper, Federal Reserve notes, that's the way you get paid. You know, General Motors isn't paying in gold and silver. God told you to use gold and silver. This Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, checks, mortgages, interest, and usury, that's your idea. You came up with that plan. And, of course, that plan has consequences. Now, you don't like the consequences. That's what your real complaint is. That's what people come to school here and complain about being from the People's Republic of Michigan. There's every common law right, privilege, and immunity available to you in Michigan, California, Washington, Oregon, as there is to you and I and anybody else. But the story is, once you've signed up on the ship and you're a crewman on the ship and the second mate comes along and says, hey, matey, go shovel coal, and you give him the finger, that's insubordination. That's punishable. Don't talk to the first mate about having rights. Rights among crew members on a ship in a maritime adventure don't have rights. Rights come from God. Rights come from Mount Sinai. Rights come from Moses. Rights don't come from George Bush. Rights don't come from Congress. Rights don't come from FEMA. Rights don't come from General Motors, IBM, and Microsoft. So when you're complaining about the People's Republic, you're complaining about the contracts that you have made. Well, okay. Now, you were told not to make these contracts. Let me just tell you where. Get a pen and paper out here. I'll run this one by you. Turn over here to Leviticus 18, I believe it is. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, chapter 18. So we get our feet on the ground here. Here's what God told you. He said, now, he spoke to Moses, saying, now remember by now, Moses is our representative. We decided we didn't want direct government from God to us. He talks too loud, and he's just too nasty and obnoxious for us to deal with directly. So we said, Moses, you go up and talk to God, and you come back and tell us what he said. So that's where our idea of representative government came in. And Moses, and the Eternal said unto Moses, saying, you speak unto the children of Israel and say unto them, I'm the Eternal, your God. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein you dwelt, shall you not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, where I bring you, shall you not do. And neither shall you walk in their ordinances. And you shall do my judgments and keep my ordinances to walk therein. I'm the Eternal your God, and you shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am the Eternal. Okay, now here's God. He comes to us through Moses, and he says, now you listen to me, you practice my laws, my statutes, and my judgments. Don't you practice the laws of the Egyptians, or the Romans, or the Americans, or the Germans, or anybody else. You practice my laws. Now we came along and said, well, we don't think God's got his head screwed on straight. And we think that we should have a Federal Reserve Bank. We think we should have paper money. We don't think that we should have God ruling over us. We think we should have Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, and Ted Kennedy making our laws for us. We think we should have a Supreme Court. We should have a government. And not just one, several of them. One can't make enough laws fast enough to restrict our liberties. Let's have five or six. Boys and girls, this was your idea. You came up with this program. Not God. He said, after the doings of the land of the United States of America and California, wherein you dwelt, shall you not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, that's Washington, Oregon, and California, where I'm going to bring you, shall you not do. And neither shall you walk in their ordinances. You shouldn't have social security, driver's licenses, permits, marriage licenses, business licenses, the PIC program, or belong to some clubs or organizations sponsored by or incorporated by government. You should stay away from that. Now, you had a choice to make. On the one hand, God told you in Leviticus 18, 1 through 5, don't make these contracts, don't make these deals, don't practice these crazy laws with these foreign and alien governments. And you had to make a decision, and you did. And you said, well, I think God's wrong on that point. All right. In Exodus 23, verse 32, he told us another little story over here. He said, you shall make no covenants with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you to sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it'll surely be a snare unto you. Now there he told us plainly. He says, don't make any contracts with social security, driver's licenses and permits, and marriage licenses and business licenses. Stay away from that kind of crap. Don't get involved in the income tax. Don't get involved with OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission and military enlistments and merchant marine. Stay away from that kind of crap and practice the common law and practice private property and practice increase and practice tithing. And, you know, we came to the conclusion, well, God was wrong again. It's amazing how often God is wrong, doesn't know what he's talking about, doesn't know what the hell he's doing, and so we came up with a different plan. Then along comes our Congress and our government and our president and our princes, and then they levy upon us these foreign alien forms of law. Now, you're crying about the People's Republic of Michigan, but you create it. You remind me of the Californians. The Californians live out there in a social welfare utopia. And it is a society of people that are crowded together, standing in line, waiting their turn, who are regulated and controlled to the nth degree. And they just can't wait to escape. So finally they sell their business and they escape. And they go to Colorado, or they go to Idaho, or they come out here to Missouri. And then they buy a little farm, and then they want to settle down. They want to be free from all of this government regulation that's imposed upon them in California. And what's the first thing that they do when they get here? First thing. They start bitching about the roads aren't paved. And we want the state to pave the road out to our county farm. And then they bitch and they complain about all of the things that they had in California and they don't have here that they want here. And then the next thing you know, we got to have a limited improvement district to put in this paved road and sewers and gutters and all the stuff that goes along with it. And then you got to pay for all that stuff. So then you got to have higher and higher taxes to pay for all that stuff. You know, we were happy out here with our gravel roads until you damn Californians moved in And then you started petitioning the county commission, said, well, we got to have pavement. We got to have curbs and gutters. We got to have lights. We got to have more police. You know, 20 years ago, we had a sheriff here, old Max Vaughn. Him and his wife and a couple of deputies kept order in the whole county. Today, we got a $3 million jail, a sheriff, and 15 deputies. We got a drug department over here and all this crap. You Californians brought that in here. We didn't. We didn't need it. I guess that's the way it is with God. It's just too simple. Life is just too simple unless we can create laws and rules and regulations and make it complicated. And then people start saying, well, Jesus, now we live in the People's Republic of Ozark County, Missouri. Well, it's because you created it, not the locals. The local people didn't do that. Now, I'm happy to report that we don't have that here yet, but we have it around us, and I wish you Californians would stay there in California. Go practice communism right there in California. You developed it there. You have perfected communism in California. Leave it in California. And if you get your belly full of it and get tired of it, then leave the communism there and come out here, stand on your own 2 feet, and make your living. Do your work and sit back and relax and enjoy life. But don't bring that communism here and inflict it on us. Now, I'm not here trying to be a spoiler and tell you that you shouldn't have Social Security. Hell, I don't know what's good for you. I just know that I don't want Social Security. Because I don't want the income tax. And I can't have Social Security without the income tax. My God, you got to have a way to pay for it. You know, if you're going to have Social Security and welfare and food stamps and you know, then you got to have income tax and you got to have all these various 14 taxes to pay for that stuff. I'd just as soon that I don't pay the 14 taxes and then the government butt out and stay out of my business, and if I want something, I'll provide it for myself. It costs half as much. You know, there isn't anything that government can't do for twice as much, half as well. So I'd just as soon do it half as well for nothing, and I'll just do it for myself. Now, over here in the book of Judges, this last little thought here for you. Judges chapter 2, I believe it is. Speaking about these contracts, you know, that we were told not to get involved with. Big Mike comes down here, and he tells the Israelites in Judges chapter 2, after they didn't drive out all of the inhabitants of the land, the angel of the Eternal came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I made you to go up out of Egypt, and I have brought you into the land which I swore unto your fathers. And I said, I'll never break my covenant with you, and you shall make no league with the inhabitants of this land, and you shall throw down their altars. But you have not obeyed my voice. Now why have you done this? Wherefore I also said, I will not drive them out from before you, but they shall be as thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare unto you. The gods of California, Washington, and Oregon, the gods of the United States, France, and Germany, boys and girls, are a snare unto us and thorns in our sides. Now, you can complain about the People's Republic of Michigan until hell freezes over, but the solution to your problem is not more government, it's less government. And the way you get government out of your life is to drop out of Social Security, driver's license, permits, marriage, and business licenses. Now, I know somebody's going to write me a letter now, and they're going to say, well, yeah, that's all maybe all well and good for you, Gordon, but how do you live without a business license? Because, you see, I'm a businessman, and how am I going to live without a marriage license, since how my wife won't hear of it, and she'll probably divorce me, and I got to have a driver's license in order for me to get from my home in the suburbs to my business, which is in downtown, and I got to have a Social Security number, because that's the way I borrow money from the bank, and I know there's 55 reasons why you can't do this, and I'm not suggesting that you change your lifestyle. I'm just here to tell you, here's what's causing your problem. If you want to do something about it, get after it. If you don't, then just continue living your life and shut up. You know, the complaint that people had was that they're making us ride the back of the bus. Did it ever occur to you to get the hell off the bus and go buy your own? I know, that's a wild new concept. Have you ever thought about driving your own bus? And to hell with Birmingham. Now, for every problem, there's a solution. For every legal problem, there's a remedy. We call it in law, a remedy. Got to have a remedy for every wrong. Has to have a remedy. Now, the common law deals with righting those wrongs. The civil law, admiralty, and equity don't necessarily do that. And we'll find out here that an admiralty may have jurisdiction not only of a proceeding in rem, usually against a ship, but also of a proceeding in personam. But the jurisdiction of admiralty courts generally, that is the type of case, is to be distinguished from their jurisdiction in particular cases, that is the person or res involved. The court has no power to enter judgment against any person or property until process has been duly served, but it by no means follows that it is without power to render orders in the cause that are necessary to the maintenance of the litigation itself. Thus, the power to enter temporary restraining orders is a power to preserve the status quo for the purposes of the litigation, and the power to enter such orders in advance of service of process is universally recognized. So in the traffic court or in the juvenile court or in Social Security or income tax, you know, when the IRS brings an action against you, the presumption is that you're a U.S. citizen with a Social Security number and that you're a taxpayer. If it happens that you're not a U.S. citizen, not a taxpayer, that you're a denizen or something else, well, then that's another story. It needs to be pled, and that's why I told you last time or time before that the single most important element of those 28 things you need to know about law, single most important thing is the pleadings. And you know, when you go in here and you plead not guilty, you plead into a fiction of law. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, now the next thing comes up, people will come in here to school and say, well, I went in there and I didn't plead. Well, I don't know. Why didn't you plead? And they look at me like, well, because you said, Mr. Gordon, that you shouldn't plead into a fiction of law. Well, if you got a driver's license, then you are a proper subject to plead into the fiction of law. It's not a fiction of law if you got a driver's license. It's a fiction of law if you don't have a driver's license and you plead not guilty. Now, once in a while, some guy comes in here and he says, well, I don't have a driver's license, but I do have a Social Security number and a marriage license. And I am driving a Hertz car, but I've got rights. No. I mentioned this to you last time. There's 28 things that you got to get your ducks in a row. You got 28 ducks to get in a row. If you got 10 or 15 of them in a row, you can't win. If you got 20 or 25 in a row, you can't win. If you got 27 out of 28 in a row, you can't win. If you've got 28 in a row, you can win. All of your ducks have to be in a row. And I'm not sure that you people know how many ducks there are, let alone how many ducks you're going to line up in the row. So I told you the answer to that's 28. 28. 28 things that you've got to know, be able to perform on. When you walk into court, there's 28 things that are going to come up in there, and you've got to have the right answer to all 28 of them. And if you don't, you don't need to go in there at all. Wasting your time. And that's why most of you patriots out there are saying there's no justice in America. I don't have any problem with justice in America. I know there's no justice in America. I already told you that. This is not a justice system. It's an adversarial system. But I'm not complaining about the adversarial system. I can win there. In fact, most of the time I can. I think the other day I figured this out. Now, I've done 64 cases. And I won 57, and I've lost 7. 7 out of 64, isn't that 90%? 7 divided by 64. Let's see what that is. Now, that's 10. So I lost 7 cases, so my win-loss percentage is about 90%. So I'm not complaining about going into court. Now, judges will listen to you if you got something intelligent to say, but if you go in there, you know, beating your gums and you don't have anything intelligent coming out of your lips, Boy, that judge, he's not going to be happy with you at all. And there's so much of this nonsense and diatribe going around in patriot circles that it's kind of embarrassing, quite frankly. I got to give you your mid-course reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet 7 days a week. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. And we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. But they should. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, remember, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Okay, we're talking about admiralty. In Section 13, the nature of admiralty jurisdiction is separate. While certain nations have created admiralty or maritime courts with jurisdiction differing from ordinary courts exercised by judicial bodies or judges other than those entrusted with the administration of ordinary justice in this country, admiralty is a separate jurisdiction. Okay, remember I told you that. We got admiralty, equity, and common law. But the admiralty courts are not separate judicial bodies. In implementation of the constitutional provision that the federal judicial power shall extend to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, Congress has vested original jurisdiction in admiralty and maritime causes in the federal district courts. Okay, so now when you walk into the United States District Court, that's an admiralty court. Now, that judge also wears two other hats, equity and law, but not very often. And that's because almost all causes of action are, in fact, admiralty actions. Almost everything that we deal with, when Congress enacts legislation like the Patriot Act, they're not acting in the course of the common law or equity. They're acting in the course of admiralty. You know, when your legislature in your state enacts some new law, rule, regulation, custom, usage, or practice, it's invariably, it deals with admiralty because that's where the money is. The money is in admiralty. There's nothing to be made. The state doesn't make any money off of Judge Judy. That's a service that costs money. They don't make any money off of the common law. You know, state and local governments, traffic courts and marriage, you know, and divorce, that's money-making stuff there. That's where governments rake in money. It's taxation is what it boils down to. Taxation. Fines that, you know, the highway patrolman gives you a ticket and you take and pay that fine, that's a tax. You're a businessman in ocean, the EPA comes in, that's taxation. There's money to be made there. And that's why we need a business license. I'll tell you a little story here. I had an OSHA guy come into my plant one time. A little Japanese guy. And he announced that he was there to conduct an inspection. And so I asked him, I said, well, what are you here to inspect? And he said, I'm here to inspect your factory to see if there's any violations. And I said, well, who complained? Nobody. Why are you here? Just on routine business. Do you have a search warrant? No. No, I went to public school. That's my excuse. I didn't know any better. I went to public school, and I heard something in public school about rights and constitution and search warrants and things like that. And so when I said, I think you need a search warrant here, and he said, I don't need a search warrant. I mean, that's like President Bush saying, well, I don't need any warrant to go in here and eavesdrop on your telephone conversations. I don't need any judicial oversight. I'm the President of the United States. I just go in here and snoop where I want to snoop for whatever reason I want to do it, because I'm the Presidente, and I can just do that. I didn't think that was right. And this guy is an executive branch officer, and I said, well, I think here you're going to have to need a search warrant. And he got a little uppity with me and raised his voice. In my office. Raised his voice in my office. He wasn't nowhere near big enough to do that, and so I picked this little guy up and not threw him out in the street. Bodily. And needless to say that my relationship with government from that day to this has never been the same. Boy, did they get excited. They were really irate. Now here I am, a crummy commissary, corporate CEO. Now I'm running the government's business over here. And they sent their agent over there, and I threw him out. You know, that went over like AIDS at an office Christmas party then, like that. So we went to litigation, and that's where I got my legal baptism. We started doing litigation. And then I learned in a hurry. You know, you can't just take these government guys and throw them out in the street. They take it, or they take it the wrong way. So then one day I woke up and I said, you know, I don't think that there's room here for me to be running this company and OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission. I think there's too many people on the committee trying to direct this operation. It's kind of like trying to run a ship by committee or trying to run an airliner by committee. I mean, there's only one room for one pilot up in the cockpit, you know. I mean, he can have a helper over there in the right seat, but... You know, by and large, there's only room for one guy to fly the airplane. There's only room for one guy up there on the bridge, you know, to run this ship. And that's kind of the way I saw my business. You know, I'm the captain, and there's either going to be me running this thing, or I'm going to get the hell out of here and let the government run it. So that's what I did. I got the hell out, and the government took it over. And I want you to, all you people in Boise, Idaho, you drive down to 412 South 9th Street. The big yellow building. Last time I was there, still painted yellow. I painted that building yellow 30 years ago, 1977 or 78. See how much the government's producing now that I left. There used to be 30 people working there, 30 people making their mortgage payments, 30 people making their car payments, 30 people making their livings and paying their taxes there. How many people are working there now, and how many people are making their livings and paying their mortgages and their car payments now, huh? And that's why I say, you know, I think the government has gotten in the way of small independent business, and most of us little guys over here, we just said to hell with this and got out. And we're going to leave it open for you corporations. Now, the corporations, they can't live with all of this regulation either, so they're moving to China. And your jobs are moving to China. And these are choices, you know, that we Americans have to make. And we made the choice, and now we got to live with these decisions. And I don't think this admiralty was as good an idea as we thought it was. Now, we probably thought it was a pretty good idea when we came up with it, but Congress has vested original jurisdiction in admiralty and maritime causes in the federal district courts. However, the jurisdiction of a federal district court in its law side is different from its jurisdiction as an admiralty court, and a federal court cannot at the same time and in the same cause sit both as a court of law and as a court of admiralty. Those jurisdictions are as distinct from one another as they are vested in different tribunals. The distinction is important since, unlike common law cases, admiralty cases are ordinarily tried without a jury. And an admiralty court does not have the powers inherent in an equity court as such. Furthermore, the district court sitting as an admiralty court has general jurisdiction of all causes of admiralty and maritime without reference to the sum or value of the matter in controversy or to diversity of citizenship. Notice that Seventh Amendment, $20 rule, that doesn't apply in admiralty. When we talk about admiralty, you know, we're divorcing ourselves from our Bill of Rights. Did you know that? When you join the Army, you're divorcing yourself from the Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights. Let me give you an illustration. Let's suppose that you join the Army and you're sitting in your barracks and the sergeant comes in and says, "Hey, Joe, open up your footlocker. I want to inspect it." And you look at the sergeant and you say, "Well, Sarge, have you got a search warrant? Can you see where this is going?" Honest to God, kids, do you believe that the sergeant needs a search warrant to inspect your footlocker in the Army? You got to be kidding me. No, sirree, Bob. You mean that the OSHA inspector needs a search warrant to come into a corporation and search without a warrant? No, sir. And you know, President Bush isn't wrong about all these searches. You know, the media is raising all this hullabaloo about searches and one thing or another. That's just political BS and smokescreen. There isn't anything the president's going after or has been going after that he needs a warrant for. The president's not in violation of any laws. That's already been adjudicated long, long ago. Let's take a look at this. The other day I heard that ITT or Ma Bell or somebody over here had turned over their billing records to some agency of the government. And then, I don't know, some news media group over here, a bunch of schnucks that don't know their hind ends from hot water. They got to jawboning about that and how the president needed a warrant and one thing and another. Listen, there's nothing private about your telephone bill. There isn't any right or expectation of privacy that attaches to your telephone bill. Hell, I can get that information. It's out there. Now, there are some places, and I'll just share this one with you here on the Fourth Amendment. There's a publication called the Search and Seizure Law Report. Search and Seizure Law Report. And the Supreme Court hands down more decisions every term on search and seizure than any other section of the Constitution. And that's because it's always handled by res judicata. Res judicata. That's on a case-by-case basis. In legal theory, every search and seizure claim can be heard by the U.S. Supreme Court. It's not, but it could be. Same thing with free exercise. Every First Amendment claim in legal theory could be heard by the Supreme Court. It's not, but it could be. Now, stare decisis is another rule of law that says once settled, always settled. You know, once this has been settled, we're not going back to revisit it. Now, Miranda versus Arizona is one of those stare decisis cases. And Seeger versus U.S. is one of those res judicata type cases. So when we're talking about Fourth Amendment searches, like the telephone company turning over your billing records to some agency of government, one of the threshold questions is, do you have any legitimate expectation of privacy in that area? If you do, then maybe they need a warrant, but there's no expectation of privacy in ordinary business records. In fact, it comes under what we call the exception to the hearsay rule. It's not even hearsay. So I listened to all this mumbo jumbo going on over the CBS and Bob Schieffer and all that crap, and I kind of shake my head and say, these people have their heads right up the left end of their anatomy. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. They talk about privacy. There's nothing in the Constitution that guarantees you any right to privacy. Now, you can be private. I try to be pretty private in some things, but on certain things I'm pretty public over. And my telephone number is pretty public. You know, I give you my telephone number. That's where you can call here and you can order your free general law CD package. But did it ever occur to you that I might have another telephone number? You know, one that I don't divulge to anybody else, so that my friends and close associates can call me. I'll bet you George Bush has some old buddies. And I'll bet you that they can just pick up the telephone and dial right straight into George Bush right now, right this minute. And George will pick up his cell phone and answer that and say, "Hey, Bob, what you doing? How's tricks? How's the wife and the kids?" And then there's the public George Bush, you know, where you call the White House and you go through 14 secretaries and maybe you can get to the president, maybe you can't. And you can rest assured that Dick Cheney, anytime he wants to call George Bush, you know, he's not sitting there going through 14 secretaries. All right. So there's certain things that are private and certain things that aren't. That's just the way life is. And it's up to you to protect your privacy. You don't have any governmental expectation to privacy. Government is in the business of uncovering your privacy. They're not in the business of protecting it, creating it, establishing it, or protecting it. Government doesn't protect your privacy, boys and girls. Government destroys your privacy. They invade your privacy. They take your privacy away. That's their business. That's their job. Policemen are nosy people. Policemen are sticking their nose into everybody's business all the time. It's what they get paid for. They're nosy people. And if you want privacy, it's up to you to keep your private personal information away from those nosy individuals who work for government and trying to figure out what it is you're doing and why. If you want privacy, that's something that's private property. And you can have all that you want. I'm not complaining about privacy. I'm not complaining about my telephone bill being sent off to George Bush to inspect. I don't have any expectation to privacy there. Same thing with bank accounts and so on down the line. You know, there's very little that you deal with here in trade, commerce, business, and industry that has any privacy that goes along with it. Now, there's a couple of other things here. Number 133 and the number 187 that I wanted to share with you. Let me flip over here to 187 called comparative negligence. The contributory negligence doctrine is not an absolute defense in admiralty, since the doctrine of comparative negligence prevails. See, contributory negligence we get from the law side. Comparative negligence is what we get from admiralty. Under this doctrine, contributory negligence only diminishes the amount of recovery. In actions under the Jones Act, it has a specific statutory basis, where a maritime tort action pursuant to the Saving to Suitors Clause is tried in a state court or on the law side of a federal district court, the comparative negligence doctrine is applicable. Where, however, the wrongful death statute of a state is applied by an admiralty court, the state rule on the effect of contributory negligence rather than the comparative negligence doctrine of the maritime law is usually applied. So with regard to the question of division of damages or their distribution in proportion to the degree of negligence in admiralty cases in which the proportions are not prescribed by statute, the cases are not in harmony, although the prevailing view now appears to be that in the case of a both-to-blame collision, the full burden of the losses sustained by both ships should be shared equally. Well, let's take a look at that. You're working on the job, see? I mean, you're not a maritime man. You're working for some corporation. And in the process of your work duties over here, you get your finger cut off in a press. Well, what are you going to do? Sue your employer over here because he had a bad press over here and he was negligent? No. See, we're not going to use contributory negligence. We're just going to pay you for the finger. You go to workman's compensation and you just go down the scale over here. There's no trial by jury. We're not looking at any criminal sanctions. You're going to get paid so many dollars for that finger, period. That summary process, it's contractual in nature. Comes under your Social Security account. It's your seaman's papers to work in this company. And we're not going to take you in here to a common law court. You're not going to sue your employer. You waive your right to sue when you take on the employment with your Social Security number. Now, that's the way the game is played. And remember, this is all done under contract. So anytime that you don't get a trial, you don't get a jury, you don't get to sue, well, that's summary process. That's admiralty. And they come up with a formula under the terms of the contract. Now, that's why you're complaining about the People's Republic of Michigan that we don't have any rights. Well, of course. You waived all of your rights when you joined this outfit. You waived your rights when you got your employment contract. You waived your rights when you joined the Army with that enlistment contract. You waived your rights when you got that marriage license. Don't sit there and argue with Social Lady over spanking your kid or sending your kid to public school or having your kid taken away and put in foster care. The kid isn't yours. The kid belongs to the state. You gave him to the state with the birth certificate. That's the state's kid. And they let you raise it. They let you put braces on his teeth and wipe his bottom and take care of him until he's old enough to go to war. And then they take him and they send him off as cannon fodder to Iraq. You know, most of you people have the wrong perspective on law. You know, you have babies and you say to yourself, well, this is my kid. No, it's not. It's not your child. You're driving a car and you say, this is my car. No, it's not. It belongs to the state as evidenced by the license plates on it. You say, well, this is my wife. No, it isn't. It's the state's woman and you just have an equitable right of use and vice versa for you ladies. You don't get any jury trial in a divorce. Social Lady doesn't need a search warrant. Come on, kids. Time to wake up. Now, you know, God told you this. I told you before, this isn't God's program that you're complaining about. The program that you're complaining about in the People's Republic of Michigan is the Roman civil law administered through admiralty under contract in opposition to thou shalt not steal and thou shalt not commit adultery. And after all, this is what you people wanted. You want the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and all the privileges, perks, and benefits that go along with them. And there's many. Social Security has 108. And it's the 8th plank to the Communist Manifesto. I'm not telling you that there aren't perks and benefits that come from Social Security. And you people that are collecting Social Security checks every month know that. Somebody's paying it in, and you're collecting it out. It's a hell of a neat program, isn't it? Now, I took a look at it, and I said to myself, no, I don't think I'm going to buy into that. I think I'm going to opt out. I joined up back in 1950. I joined up with Social Security. And I stayed in till 1978. So I was in 28 years, and I paid them $12,000 and some change. And then I opted out. And if I'd have stayed in from 78 to... you know, about 2002 or 3 or 4, I don't remember exactly. When I turned 65, that was a couple of years ago, you can also draw when you're 62. They said, well, we'll give you $805 a month. I said, nah, I don't think I'll get out of bed for $805. I don't think I want to join the People's Republics of Social Security for $800 a month. Got, you know, I'm a whore, and I'm for sale. But I ain't for sale that cheap. Kind of reminds me of this whole gal. You know, this guy came up to her and says, hey, would you go to bed with me for $50? And she said, you bet I would. He said, would you go to bed with me for $40? And she said, well, yeah. He said, well, would you go to bed with me for $30? And she said, well, I'd have to think about that. He said, well, would you go to bed with me for $20? And she said, what kind of a girl do you think I am? And he said, well, sweetheart, we've already decided what kind of a girl you are. We're just haggling over the price. People with Social Security numbers are whores. We're not arguing that point. We're just haggling over the price. And I don't think Social Security pays near enough. That's my opinion. Don't pay near enough. Not for the freedoms and liberties that you have to give up. You know, God gave you quite a few freedoms and liberties. Gave you a lot of property. And then you turned around and you threw the property away. You said, I don't want the land. And so you gave up your claim to the land, gave up your claim to property and property rights, adopted the first plank to the Communist Manifesto. Second plank, remember the first plank calls for the abolition of all right to property. Second plank calls for a heavy progressive income tax. Fifth plank, central bank. The eighth plank, Social Security. Hey, guys, we got what we wanted. Now, what are we complaining about? People's Republic of Michigan. Come on here. Come on. Time to grow up and get real. And it's administered through contract. It's administered through licenses. It's administered through admiralty, which doesn't have much in the way of rights. It's kind of a summary process. You know, the captain comes back and says, put out the cigar. There isn't any whys or wherefores or are there exceptions and rules? Is there a smoking lounge? It's just put out the damn cigar. No smoking on this ship. Summary process. In the Army, it's charge that machine gun nest. Admiralty Rules of Procedure, number 133. I'm running out of time here, but I think I'll flip over to it. Section 133. Now remember, I'm reading this to you right out of the Legal Encyclopedia. That's so that you don't think that I'm trying to pull your leg. Admiralty has its own rules, methods, and procedures, which are noted for their brevity, celerity, simplicity, and due largely to the influence of the civil law system on the development of admiralty practice. Well, I mean, they don't mince any words. They just come right out and tell you, hey, we got our own rules here, Buster. Oh, yeah. God had rules. Yeah, the common law has rules, but they're complex and they deal with rights and property. And hey, we don't want to deal with rights and property here in the Admiralty Court. We don't want to run this war by committee. We want to run this war by captains. And the captain comes up and says, hey, plebe, this is what we're going to do. Get after it. And all he wants to hear from you, sucker, is, yes, sir. Or if you're a Marine, it's, sir, yes, sir. That's all he wants to hear. I'm not talking about rights in the Army, kids. Well, I'm just about out of time. I'm going to have to break it off right there. We'll pick this up next time, talking about admiralty and why it is you live in the People's Republic of Michigan next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by pre-arrangement, and the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. So if you'd like more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website. Homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. Got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening. And good night, friends.